Coming up after a brief break, we'll talk with author Stephanie Evans about her recent book, Black Women in the Ivory Tower. Dr. Stephanie Evans, Assistant Professor of African American Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Florida, recently released a new book called Black Women in the Ivory Tower, 1850 through 1954. I spoke with her earlier this week to gain her insight on this interesting topic. Dr. Evans, Oklahoma recently honored Ada Fishers, who is the first black student admitted to the OU Law School in the 40s. Take us back to that time, if you would, and describe what were some of the obstacles that not just Ms. Fishers, but other black women experienced when they tried to advance themselves in higher education.
Well, I think it's really interesting to note that the Sipula case was exactly 100 years after the first lawsuit for an African-American woman to be able to go to school. Of course, that was the Sarah Roberts case in 1848 in Boston. And even though so much had changed, I mean, she was actually suing to go to law school, there were still so many barriers. And once she got in, obviously you all know, sitting in segregated spaces, in the physical space, really impacted black women's ability to be accepted in the intellectual realm. So going to college for African-American women in, you know, from the mid-1850s to the mid-1950s was really a struggle on a number of levels. And the physical space, the physical abuse that they sat through in an effort just to get into school, and when they actually got into school, it was very difficult. Some of the things that were going on, let's say, for example, at Berkeley or University of Cincinnati, they even segregated the swimming pools. So, you know, a swimming course was required in the 1920s at the University of Cincinnati. And so the African-American women could not actually swim until Fridays, until, you know, then they cleaned out the pool. It was really a barrage of insults on the physical, which really had an impact on everyone's ability to understand that black women actually were good students and did have something to offer intellectually.
Well, that certainly is a lot of pain that they must have gone through. What are some of the qualities that the first black women to obtain higher education that they must have had in order to persist?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think part of what happened with black women was they were curious just like anyone else. And so the determination, a lot of the inner will that it took to survive was part of natural curiosity. They wanted to grow. They wanted to learn. There were narratives about, you know, the joy of learning entomology, the joy of learning literature. And so part of the drive was a simple will and determination and curiosity that they had. But a lot of what they also had was family and community support. And that in African-American communities, because of the history of oppression, there is a tradition of uplift. Also being women, there is an expectation to serve. So there was a real drive for all of the women to actualize this combination of race and gender and be a success despite monumental odds.
So certainly they had the motivation, the inner motivation, but was there also a career motive among many of these women?
Oh, absolutely. Black college women of this era, they were driven, absolutely determined to break every barrier set, whether it was, you know, professional schools like law school or medical school, but also a will to be an academic. So the story of black women in college is not just as students, but the professional drive to be a part of the university structure that produces knowledge. And so part of the larger story is black women as professors as well and their determination, because the stereotypes were that African Americans were not intellectual beings. Women were not intellectual beings. So, of course, African-American women could not possibly be intellectual beings. And so part of the larger story of black women in college is the determination to not only consume knowledge, but to be recognized as producers of knowledge.
Well, now, your book, Black Women in the Ivory Tower, 1850-1954, certainly a turbulent 100 years or so. What's happened in the 50 or so years since then in higher education for African-American women?
Well, there have obviously been monumental changes, that black women in college outpace black men in numbers, and there's a number of reasons for that, but for the black women who are in college now, there are a lot of different struggles. Racism is no longer so overt, where no one's spitting on you, you know, or doing the things that some of the desegregation era went through. But now to be a black woman in college is really to still struggle, as seen with the Don Imus incident. These young women were athletes for sure, but they were also students. And so black women are still trying to overcome these ancient myths that they are nothing but sex objects. They are certainly not worthy to be students. They're there because of affirmative action. And so even though in numbers black women are in college are definitely doing better, there's still so many barriers, and the fight against affirmative action is shown that the struggle is not over. 40 years of somewhat policy that addresses, some policy that addresses hundreds of years and generations of oppression is just not enough.
Now, these are institutions in the 1800s and before 1954. What were their motives in terms of allowing black women on their campuses? These were not court-ordered for the most part, is that correct?
No, and this is just a fascinating history, that the development of higher education in America, just, in and of itself, is fascinating, and it really has to do with location. It has to do with migration patterns, who was settling where, what belief systems were in place, what immigrant systems were there. Religion had a very big impact on what institutions were set up and who got to go where. For example, initially the Quakers and the Catholics were relatively tolerant of African-American education, which is why in places like Georgia and North Carolina, you have a significant, relative to the South, you have a significant history of access. But there's also some, access in the Midwest, in Iowa and Kansas and Oklahoma, some in California, but definitely in the in Ohio and Philadelphia and the other, New England and those areas. Development was uneven, but definitely had to do with who was there, what their belief systems were. Definitely the abolitionist tradition initially set up in Ohio and places like Ohio and Kentucky, Tennessee in some areas, had a very big impact on who had access to college.
Well, obviously the struggle does continue in many ways, but as we look back at the history, what's the walkaway message on this? What is it that we can learn from this struggle that took so many, many years? What do we learn from that we can apply to our century today?
Oh, there's so much. The first being a critical understanding of history. Those who are advocating race-blind admissions and such policies are really ignoring fundamental structural problems that need to be fixed if we are really to have an equal playing field. We're not there. We've not been there. And without a clear understanding of this history, we won't understand why, taking away points for race is really a problem, but why legacy admits, getting points for legacy admits is really a slap in the face considering what has happened and what we're still trying to overcome. So the first thing is a critical understanding of history. I think the second thing this history allows us to do is be inspired. These stories of women in historically black colleges, you know, going to school with no heat, going to school against all odds, against mobs, is really a tale of human will that allows us to say, yes, this is something we can appreciate, and really appreciate the privilege that it is to go to college. These women left a legacy of dissertations, that is, you know, the graduate stories. That's just college. The story of Black women in graduate studies is fabulous. I mean, Eva Dykes wrote a 644-page dissertation on Alexander Pope. I mean, it's really an inspiration towards academic excellence.
Well, I want to thank our guest, Dr. Stephanie Evans, the author of Black Women in the Ivory Tower, 1850 through 1954. Thank you for joining us on College Connection. For more information on this topic, go online to www.professorevans.com.